The parasha begins, Vayigash Eilav Yehuda, Vayoymer Bi'ani, Dabeno Abdechot Ababazne Adoni, Vayicher Abcho Bi'Avdecho Kichamecher Kefare. We know that Binyamin is accused of stealing the Becher, and Yehuda comes to plead in front of the viceroy of Mitzrayim, who he does not know is Yosef HaTzadik, and he says, please let me come close and speak Ba'ozne. He wants to speak in Yosef's ear, in the viceroy's ear. There's a couple of things that are interesting over here. Number one, we don't see anywhere here that Yehuda says Binyamin didn't take the Becher. He doesn't even say that. Binyamin is officially going to become a slave in Mitzrayim because he stole the Becher. The first thing you think Yehuda is going to say is, Binyamin didn't steal it. The attorney is going to come, he's going to go completely off topic. What does he say? He says is, V'anemer Adoni Yeshlonu Ov Zokein, V'yela Zekunim Katan, that my father, my father, who is Binyamin's father, is old, V'achiv Meis, V'yivasu Hulu V'adim V'avoy Evoy, and he's going to, that he already lost one child, my father, he's going to lose a second child. He's giving him a whole sob story. But why don't you start off by saying that Binyamin didn't steal the Becher? Secondly, where in the world does he get the chutzpah, Yehuda? We know Yehuda is a melech of Klal Yisrael. But where did he have the chutzpah to go over to Yosef and say, I want to speak in your ear? We also have to remember, the Targum tells us, that Pashtus, Yosef didn't make believe like he knows what Yehuda was talking about. There was a Meturgimen. Yehuda spoke in Lashon HaKodesh. There was a Meturgimen that translated, and the Torah in the Targum Minutes and says was Menashe, his son. He translated Yehuda's words from Lashon HaKodesh to Lashon Mitzvahs, whatever the language of the Mitzvahim spoke. So he wants to come close to him and say something to him. I don't understand what you're saying. Like I could say, no, I don't understand what you're saying. Where you're sitting, you want to come closer and tell it to me louder? I mean, why you scream in my ear? Then I'll understand. I don't understand now. Words are very important things. It says in the Gra, Yehuda kept on saying Avdecha Avi. When he was talking to Yosef, he was referring to his father, saying is Avdecha Avi, your slave, my father. And the Gaon says because Yosef allowed him to say it, it was not covered that he should allow him to say it. And because he listened to it and wasn't Meicha and let him say it, he lost 10 years of his life. Yosef was supposed to live 120 years. Yosef only lived 110 years. The question is, the Gaon says, for the 10 times that he said it. Avdecha Avi is quoted 5 times. It says it in last week's parasha in Kapitel Mem Gimel Pasuk Chaf Ches. It says Ayem Yishama Avdecha Lo Aminu. It says the word Avdecha over there. It says it again in this parasha. Ravahiki Lino Avdecha Avi again, and it says it 3 other times in this parasha. Total of 5 times says the word Avdecha. So according to the Goyin, why did he lose 10 years of his life? He should have lost 5. So as we just explained, there was a Meturgimen. Yosef understood it both times. Yosef understood Lashon HaKodesh when Yehuda said it, and then he heard it again when his son Menashe, who was translating it for him, he heard it again. A total of 10 times. And because he heard it 10 times and he wasn't Meicha, he lost 10 years of his life. You have to be very careful with words. Targum Yonason says that the reason why he says the same Yesoid that Yosef lost years of his life. He says the reason why, it's an interesting pshat, that Yosef, when Yaakov was coming to Mitzrayim, Yosef came out in his Bidin Malchus. Yaakov couldn't see Yosef yet. He saw what looked like the king, or the viceroy. Being that he saw the Bidin Malchus, Yaakov was Mishtachavet to him. And that was also Yosef was punished for that. He shouldn't have gone out in his Bidin Malchus, because that caused his own father to bow down to him. A little bit later in the parasha, it says, when Yaakov came down to Mitzrayim and he spoke to Pare, Vayemer Pare al Yaakov, Kamo yimei shnei chayecha. Pari asks Yaakov, how many years, how old are you? Vayim Yaakov el Pari yimei shneim ugurai shloshim yashonam atzoroim ho yimei shnei chayai v'loi hisigur es yimei shnei chayai v'samei ugurim. He tells Pari I had a hard life. Das Akenim, Yuval Tesis, is quoted often that Yaakov was supposed to live 180 years, like his father Yitzchak. He lost 33 years of his life, because there are 33 words in these psukim, and because he sort of, kaviyachol, complained that he had a hard life, because of that he lost 33 years of his life. He said in Sichas Musa, he asked a question. The 33 words, I don't know if you were paying attention to the 33 words, but the 33 words that I just said included Vayomer Pari Yaakov Kama Yimei Shnei Chayecha. Included Pari's question. Pari said Kama Yimei Shnei Chayecha, and Yaakov answered. The 33 words include that. Why is Yaakov getting punished for Pari asking the question? I once saw Maisa from the Chafetz Chaim. There was some sort of gezeira that I think it was a Polish department in the Ministry of Education, and the Chafetz Chaim went in front of the head honcho there, whatever his title is, to the head of the Ministry of Education to plead his case. Chafetz Chaim did not speak the language they spoke. He spoke in Yiddish. And the Chafetz Chaim was sitting there and he starts saying his case and he starts crying. And he's just wailing, and you can see on his face he's just emotionally distressed. He's done, the interpreter gets up, and he's about to start interpreting. And what he just said was, and he started, the head person says, sit down. I don't need to hear what you said. I understood exactly what he said. There are times that a person with the words that he speaks, even if he's not speaking coherently, even if you don't understand the same language, but there's an inherent, it's given over by the face, by the person, the way he looks, what is feeling, what you can tell a person is, you know, very distressed about something, or he's not really distressed. Someone could say, I'm sorry, and have a look on his face, many kids, many adults as well, sorry. What does the word sorry mean when you don't really mean it? You can tell on your face you don't really mean it. It's just the words. And then there are times that even if you don't really understand the words, you don't even understand the language, but you can still understand what the person is saying. And that's why Yaakov apparently was punished over here, the Sichas Musar says. Chaim Shmulevitz says he was punished over here for these words of Pari asking him the question. Because Yaakov, his face you were able to see already. And Yaakov's face, Pari could see, this guy, that's why he asked him, boy, how many years have you been, how old are you? Because it looks like he had a stressful life. And then Yaakov answered he had a stressful life. But because he had that look, so he got punished for that too. Another shape in the Sifras Musa. This pshat, maybe we can understand what's going on at the beginning of the parasha. Vayigash Elov Yehuda Vayeme Bi Adoni Vidabeno Avdechadova Eznei Adoni Vayichab Chabi Avdecha. He knew that if he's going to tell him Binyamin didn't steal it, he knew they weren't going to listen. They were looking to jail Binyamin, they didn't understand what he was saying. If he thought they didn't understand his language, again, Yosef really did understand. But he didn't understand his language. He says, I want to speak into your ear. He wanted to speak with heart. He wanted to tell to go to Yosef and just, he told him about his tzaris, about his father, that his father is going to die, he's going to cause his father distress, his father had a hard life, but really coming from the heart. And when something comes from the heart, it could take a pile, it can have be much stronger than any good argument. The better argument would have been to say is, Binyamin didn't steal it. But this is even a better argument. When he sees that it's coming from the heart, that's what Yehuda was trying to accomplish over here. We have to be very careful with our words. Yosef was punished later on for the words that he used, and that he allowed Yehuda to use. But even without words, we have tremendous koyach to do things and to accomplish things. A little bit later in the parasha, Yosef meets Binyamin, Binyamin meets Yosef, and it says, Ayipol al tzavarei Binyamin achiv ayefk, uvinyamin bocha al tzavarov. Zogt Rashi. Ayipol al tzavarei Binyamin achiv ayefk, al shnei mikdashreis, shasidin liyus bechelkos al Binyamin, v'seif el-chariv. Yosef fell on Binyamin's neck, shoulder, Because of the two Beit HaMikdashes that were in the future would be destroyed in the Chelek of Binyamin. Ubinyamin bocha al tzavar rav, and Binyamin cried on the tzavar of Yosef, al mishkan shilah she'asa liyet b'chalko she'yosef v'sefer le'echarv. Interesting. So Rashi says we have Binyamin and Yosef, they're falling on each other's shoulders and they're crying. Binyamin cried over the Mishkan Shilei and Yosef cried over the two Beit HaMikdashes. Why didn't Binyamin also cry about the two Beit HaMikdashes? And why didn't Yosef also cry about the Mishkan Shilei? I'm worried, you know, you're only crying about Binyamin, Chas V'Shalom, didn't care the two Beit. He's worried about Yosef, about Mishkan Shilei. What's going on over here? It says in the Zohar Kaddish that Yosef was crying because he saw what was going to happen, that there was going to be a period in Klal Yisrael. There's going to be a separation between the 10 Shvatim and the 2 Shvatim, and Klal Yisrael are going to go into Golus. And that's why Yosef was crying here. It was a very deep, so to say, crying. Now this can ask a question. He wants to know why all of a sudden over here, it's like a light bulb went off. One second. The two Beit HaMikdashes are going to be destroyed in Binyamin's territory, and the Mishkan Shilei is going to be destroyed in Yosef's territory. They start crying over each other. Why now? Well, Diskin says is that until now Yosef was misabel. He thought he was scared that his father died. He was also worried about his brother Binyamin, and Binyamin was scared that Yosef died or thought he died. When a person is sad, a person is not besimcha, it's not shayach to have nevuah. Shayir, the shchina is only shayir on a person. The only time a shchina rests on a person is when the person is besimcha. If he's not besimcha, he cannot rest on it. Now that Binyamin and Yosef are reunited, and Yosef knows now that Binyamin is okay, and his father is alive and well, and Binyamin sees that Yosef is alive, now all of a sudden the light bulbs are going off. Now all of a sudden they're gaining the nevuah, because now they're both besimcha. They're not besimcha about what's happened, but the nevuah comes out, but now they're besimcha to have the shechina b'sheir on them. It says in the Teferes Einasim, it's a very interesting pshat. There's a Tanchuma that says that Yaakov knew Baruch HaKodesh that he would never see Gehenna if all of his children would be alive when he dies. In other words, he would die, he would never see any of his children die in his lifetime. He would never see Gehenna. It's so interesting that when Yosef was sold, Yosef disappeared from Yaakov. And the question was, is that he was scared that maybe one of his children died, and if his child died, then Yitake wouldn't, he would have, Gehenim could possibly affect him. But there's one little caveat that people don't concentrate on. We know there's a ma'aseh with Rachel and Leah. Rachel was supposed to marry Yaakov. She didn't want to embarrass Leah, and she gave over the siman. It's a beautiful story. It's a beautiful story. She didn't want to embarrass Leah. But Rachel still did something wrong. No one thinks about that part, but he says that it's brought down that Yaakov knew that there was going to be a punishment, that one of Rachel's children were going to go into slavery because of that. Because she didn't have a right to do that. It's a beautiful thing, but even when you do the right thing, there could be slight or ramifications that could be more than slight negative effects. So it was a beautiful thing and it was a wonderful thing and she got a lot of schar for that, but at the same time something didn't happen because Yaakov trusted her. Yaakov gave her the siman and then she went and betrayed him. She gave it over. So Yaakov was chesbening when he realized that Yosef was not here. He figured that it must be that maybe Yosef got sold into slavery. That's what he was hoping. He had this hope. He knew that it was supposed to happen to one of Rachel's children. She says, okay, maybe this, you know, maybe Yosef, I don't see him here, he's not here, but he's not dead. He's alive. He's just sold as a slave, which is the punishment that was going to happen because of what Rachel did. Again, punishment, we see what happened, Yosef was sold into slavery, which was the best thing for him and for Klal Yisrael. And ended up that Yosef ended up becoming the vice-president of Mitzrayim and helping Klal Yisrael out. But with that being said, there was still some aspect of punishment. Now that Binyamin is going to be taken into slavery, when Yehuda is coming to Yosef to tell him that my ready father lost one person, that Binyamin is going to be sold into slavery, now what's he going to think? He's going to say, Binyamin was the slave. I see now Binyamin is the slave. I can't think anymore Yosef was the slave. Yosef must be dead. Because if Binyamin is, it didn't say two of Rachel's children were going to go into slavery, only one. So if Yehuda would come back and tell Yaakov the news that Binyamin was sold into slavery, then he wouldn't be thinking anymore that Yosef was sold as an Eved, because only one of his children would be sold as an Eved. And therefore, he would know that Yosef died. He would know that Yosef, he would, not know, but he would think that Yosef died. And by thinking that Yosef died, that means that he's gonna, the Gehenim is gonna hit him, and that would cause him a tremendous Agmas Nefesh. Very interesting pshat from its first Jameson. Very interesting. Sasema says that there were two things that Yehuda was worried about. We know that Yehuda promised his Olam Haba if he does not be to Yaakov, you know, if he does not Shua, he's going to lose him Olam Haba if he doesn't bring back Yom. Yehuda was worried about two things. Yehuda was worried about him losing his Olam Haba. That's why he wanted to bring Binyamin back. And secondly, he was worried about his father. He was worried that his father was going to die, was going to have, you know, problems, you know, going to be distressed. He was concerned about him. Yosef was not looking to play games. This whole spiel back and forth, you look at it, it's almost like Yosef's like almost taunting them. He doesn't tell them who they are. They're sweating over here. He's going to take Binyamin. I mean, what is he doing? And it sounds like this. Yosef wanted Yehuda and the brothers that they should have charata for what they did. They did a chet. They sold him. They shouldn't have sold Yosef. But what was the problem with selling Yosef? What was the biggest problem that they did wrong when they sold Yosef? The biggest problem was they didn't think about the ramifications it would have on their father. You want to sit down and psak and give it din that Yosef was chasing them. He was a raidif and they had to do something about him. But when they sat down in that judgment, they did not take into account their father. And they had a chrayis to take into account their father. They had to think about someone else, not just think about themselves. They had to think about others. And that was the taina on them. The taina on them was that they didn't think that. So Yosef was waiting for them to say, in the beginning, when Yehuda is saying, that we learn out, that Yehuda was worried about his own thing. But then, Yehuda at the end says, all he talks about, that he's worried about his father. At the end, the pasuk tells us, and his only was concerned was about his father. Yehuda, rather, we already know, he rose back to Malchus because the Maisa with Tamar. Tamar was about to get killed, and he said, Satka Mimeni. He got up, and he didn't think about himself. He thought about Tamar. The Melech and Klai Yisrael are supposed to be thinking about others. That's the Iker. And came out, he could have made a chesed. Yehuda could have said, it's Chil Hashem. I'm going to get up there and say that I'm the one that did the Maisa, that's my child with Tamar, that's going to look bad for me. I'm not going to do it. It's a Chil Hashem. He didn't think about what the ramifications were going to be for him. He looked at what the other person. Tamar was going to get killed. If he wouldn't have gotten up, Tamar was going to get killed. He said he can't allow it. But Yosef didn't know that. So Yosef, until when all of a sudden it broke loose, when he said, I can't anymore. He says, I have to now, I have to, that's it. His mouth broke forward and he says, I now have to say it. What was the point? What was the breaking point? For Yosef to say it was when he realized that what the Yehuda's only concern, one and only concern, the other concern about the Olam Haba was out the window. That he forgot, he put on the side. His one and only concern was about his father. And maybe that's the pshat. Of course Binyamin was concerned about the two Beit HaMikdashes that were going to be destroyed in his property. And of course the Yosef HaTzadik was worried about Shiva. But Rashi doesn't need to point that out. We're talking about Tzadikim, Yosef and Binyamin. He doesn't have to point that out. Rashi's pointing out to us that they were more worried about the first I'm going to worry about to him. Yes, it's all for Klal Yisrael, but first I'm worried about him. Yeah, of course they're worried about it for themselves. And that's what Rashi's trying to point out to us. Everyone has to think about other people. Some of the people, they get so entrenched with themselves and they don't even think about what they're doing, that they're not even accomplishing anything. I once heard an interesting marshal. There was a guy went hiking on a big mountain, and he was digging. He happened to, as he was hiking, he found a place that looked like a good digging place, And he started digging a little bit and he found a huge treasure chest full of treasures. One problem. It was stuck in the ground. He could not get it out. It was too heavy. It was stuck in. He says, listen, I don't want to give away anything from my treasure. But the only way I'm able to get this out is if I go get someone to help me shop it. So I'll go offer someone 50%, and they'll help me shop it. It's better than nothing. I can't even accomplish anything without it. I have to shop the whole thing. I've got nothing. So he goes into the town, and when he's in the town, he meets one person, and there's this guy, he's sitting there, and he sees him. He's leaning against the building with all his might. He's like leaning against the building. The guy says, excuse me, sir, would you like to help me out? The guy says, I'm busy. What do you want? He says, no, you don't understand, you know, it's a great opportunity for you. I have a big treasure chest full of gold, diamonds, to be able to retire. Just come help me grab it out and I'll share you 50-50. The guy's like, didn't you hear me? I'm busy. The guy's like, hello, I just told you there's a treasure. He says, can't you see what I'm doing? I'm sitting here holding up this building. This is like a 20-foot, you know, it's a 20-story building he's leaning against. The guy's like, hello, you're not holding, you can walk away in this building. How? Hey, get away from me! Don't you see I'm busy? It's gonna fall down if I walk away. I can't leave here. The guy says, okay, this guy's crazy. He walks away, looks for another person, and I'll help him. Oh, this guy's a stun machine. Goes to another person, sees this guy, he's got a big rifle, slung over his shoulder, and he's marching back and forth. It's already dark at night, and he's marching back and forth. He says, excuse me, sir. He goes through his whole spiel again. The guy says, can't you see I'm busy? He says, what? I'm guarding the moon. He says, guarding the moon? What are you guarding the moon? He says, I'm guarding the moon. I'm in charge. Someone's going to go take it. This guy's like, I give up. He goes a little bit further. And he sees a guy sitting there, and there's a guy on a mountain, and he's got his legs and his hands on the mountain. His face is red, and he's pushing down on the mountain. And the guy goes to his spiel again. He says, what are you doing? He says, don't you see I'm busy? He says, if I walk away from here, this mountain is going to explode. I'm saving the whole city by standing here.
I'd stay away from that town,
man. He continues, and he finds another person, and the guy's sitting there with a pen and paper, and it's raining outside, and he's sitting there, and he's counting 4,722, 4,723, and the guy's like, gives his whole spiel, come get the treasure, and the guy says, I'm busy, can't you see I'm busy? What's that? I'm counting the raindrops. He says, you're counting the rain? I'm busy, get away from me. And he walks away. Now, which guy is the craziest of all of them? The guy that's craziest of all of them is the guy who's counting the raindrops. The other three, the guy who's holding up the building, the guy who's standing there guarding the moon, the guy who's keeping the mountains from destroying the city, they all think at least that they're doing something. They might not be, but at least they think they're doing something. The guy who's counting the raindrops, what is he accomplishing? What does he think he's accomplishing? He's counting the raindrops, and therefore what? It's a very important lesson of, first of all, thinking about others, but realizing you have to take a step back and say, are we really accomplishing? What is it that we're doing? We shouldn't just be sitting there and, I'm a very important person, I have a very important job. We should be thinking about what it is that we're doing, what we're trying to accomplish. Really, in the Parsha, it says, Vayasu came b'nei Yisrael, Yitin lahem Yosef, Agolis, Apiv Hara, Yitin lahem Tzedel Adach. Yosef sent Agolis. He sent wagons. Famous Rashi, Yosef sent wagons. It was the last thing, is the quote to Medrash, Bereshis Rabba, that he didn't forget the Egla Rufa. The Egla Rufa, in the middle of Yosef was learning with his father when he left him, and that's what he was sending a message. Egla, it's a play on words. Egla was talking about over here, it was an animal, and Egla over there is Egla was talking about a wagon that was sent over here, and Egla Rufa is talking about an animal. But it's a play on words, the same word of Egla. Question is, if you look in the Pesukim, it says, one time it says, Yitain Lahem Yosef Agolis Al Pi Paray. And then the Pasuk says, Yosef Shalach, it doesn't say Paray. Why is the Pesukim, it seems, sometimes the Pasuk says, it says that he sent, Yitain Lahem Yosef Agolis Al Pi Paray, that he sent it through the words of Paray. And then the other time, it says, Shalach Yosef Lasei Soyesei. Was it with the words of Paray, or did he send it without the words of Paray? How did he send it? So Reb Chaim Paltiel says, "The Hagolos Asher Heichen Paray Avodizara. Paray didn't. Paray was everything. Every single wagon that left Mitzrayim had avodah zarah. He had to etch into the agolos, into the wagons, avodah zarah. So what he did was that Yosef wanted special permission that the one that he's going to send for his father shouldn't have that. And therefore, he had to go ask Pari. It's interesting that Yosef was sending a message to his father that all these years, in the depths, the tomb of Mitzrayim, he was able to stay from Yid and do the right thing. We know Avraham Avinu, he made an Eshel. It says Aitala Eshel B'Veshava. Eshel stands for, you know, Rashi and Saita says, Achila, Shtiya, and Lavoya. He fed people, he gave them the drink, and Lavoya, he was Malaga them. He walked them out. What's the point of being Malaga them? There's a din in the first Halacha, you're supposed to be Malaga them. And Dal Ramis, how far, what you learn, Machlaikis, but you're supposed to be Malaga them. Walk someone out. What's the say? Walking someone out, Lavoya, gives him a shmir. The Chavetz Chaim and the Havas Chesed says that actually Levaya means you're supposed to give the guy directions how to go, you're supposed to give him tzedula, you're supposed to give him food, and therefore it helps him have a safe trip. But the point of Levaya is that you show you care about someone. You make sure to be careful about everyone's possessions, everything that's about them. You have to take yourself into account. Avraham Avinu says that Avraham Avinu, that he used to be at a hotel. And he'd come into his hotel, and he'd give you endless food. Endless food. And then at the end, he'd give you a big bill with all the stuff in it, and he'd say, here's a bill, $50,000. You don't have to pay the whole thing if you thank God. That's what Avraham Avinu's one yesod was to bring people closer to the Baruch Shem. He wanted to make the Baruch Shem's name great. Yosef was sending a message to his father that even Pari, who's in Russia, he did it al pi Pari. They were all. Pari was still the owner, and Pari was still the balabas of these wagons. So while Yosef was sending the wagons because he wanted him to give this sign to his father that he remembers the Egel Arufa and he knows how to learn, but more than that, he sent it al pi Pari. He still asked permission from Pari. Even when you're dealing with Pari, the Russia, we see that from the others, Yaakov with Lavan, and all the others. Even when you're dealing with Rishon, we have to make sure to be careful about other people's properties. Have a good chance.